One of the most touching parables that Jesus told is called the parable of the five wise and five foolish virgins. Many of us have attended weddings. Many of us have been part of a wedding, either getting married or being a part of the wedding party. And certainly we think of the joy and the happiness that surrounds that event, and the great expectations that people have, the bride and groom and the families that are related. Certainly it's a happy time. The parable that Jesus told is a bittersweet circumstance. Most of us know it. There were five wise virgins who were privileged and able to enter in with the bridegroom to the feast, to the celebration. But then there were five who were foolish, who found themselves shut out and did not get to enter in. I direct your attention to Matthew 25, beginning at verse 1, and we'll read that parable. Then shall the kingdom of heaven be likened unto 10 virgins who took their lamps and went forth to meet the bridegroom. And 5 of them were foolish, and 5 were wise. For the foolish, when they took their lamps, took no oil with them, but the wise took oil in their vessels with their lamps. Now while the bridegroom tarried, they all slumbered and slept. But at midnight there is a cry, "Behold, the bridegroom, come ye forth to meet him." Then all those virgins arose and trimmed their lamps. And the foolish said unto the wise, "Give us of your oil, for our lamps are going out." But the wise answered, saying, "Peradventure there will not be enough for us and you. Go ye rather to them that sell, and buy for yourselves." And while they went their away to buy, the bridegroom came, and they that were ready went in with him to the marriage feast, and the door was shut. Afterward came also the other virgins, saying, "Lord, Lord, open to us." But he answered and said, "Verily I say unto you, I know you not. Watch therefore, for ye know not the day nor the hour." Jesus proclaimed 3 parables in this 25th chapter. One about being ready, that's this one. One about the responsibility of the talents or the opportunities that God gives us. And the third one that we call the parable of the sheep and the goats, and that's a scene of judgment. The parable of the 10 virgins and the bridegroom pictures again a wedding. And the wedding, it appears to be at night. And it involved these 10 maidens. The bridegroom, of course, his task was to escort the bride to the feast. She's not mentioned in the parable, but of course we know she's there because there's a bridegroom. And the 10 virgins would be there to greet the procession as they came to the place of the feast. But it appears that in this instance, the bridegroom was delayed. He tarried, possibly at the home of the bride. After all, if you've ever been in a wedding, you know that there are always things that come up to tend to take up extra time. And the bridegroom was late, at least in the eyes of those who were waiting for him. And you can imagine there were various people there, possibly servants who had been preparing food, other people, and of course these 10 virgins. Everybody's waiting and waiting, and they're expected to be ready. Now let's think about these 10 virgins for a minute. These represent those in the kingdom, because we see in verse 1 of chapter 25, "Then shall the kingdom of heaven be likened unto 10 virgins." These are people in the kingdom. So this is a parable about the church. It's about people who are seeking to obey God. They took their lamps and went forth to meet the bridegroom. The coming of the bridegroom represents the second coming of Jesus. In verse 13, "Watch therefore, for ye know neither the day nor the hour wherein the Son of Man cometh." Jesus often spoke of his return, and that it would be to return in judgment of the world. And so this parable is about that as well. It's about Christians anticipating and being prepared for the Lord's return. The lamps, you might say, represent the faith of Christians. Lamps, of course, are those things that provide light. It's night, and there's a necessity for some kind of illumination. And here these virgins each have a lamp. Those ancient lamps that people used in those days used olive oil, and there was a short wick, and that would burn a nice light, and you could see by it. And their task, you might say, is to light the way for the bridegroom and the bride as they enter into the place of feasting. It gives it a little bit more celebratory, a little bit more brightness, rather than trying to find their way in the darkness. In Luke chapter 12, beginning at verse 35, Jesus said, "Let your loins be girded about, and your lights burning, and ye yourselves like unto men that wait for their Lord, when he will return from the wedding, that when he cometh and knocketh, they may open unto him immediately." This seems to be parallel to what Jesus said in Matthew 25, because he's talking about people waiting, having their lights lighted, that he's coming from a wedding, that when he comes, that they should be ready for him. Well, what about the oil? Well, maybe that's our works, because our works, like oil, keep our lights burning. Again, you can't keep a light indefinitely. It needs fuel. It needs something to convert into light energy. In ancient times, of course, it was oil. Nowadays, we use batteries or some other source of energy. But nevertheless, as you expend light, it takes energy, and it has to be replenished or the light goes out. Jesus said in Matthew chapter 5, verse 16, "Let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works and glorify your Father which is in heaven." So think of this oil as the work that keeps your faith shining. So we can make several correspondences here in this parable to the reality of the church and of Christ's return and of our work and our light that we shine in the world. So this teaches us something about being prepared. The parable is about being ready. Think of directories of names. Here I have a church directory. People's names are in this. That's a good thing, to have some kind of a directory so that we can know what do they look like and what's their phone number, where do they live, and various things of information, but it's just basically a list of names. It's a directory. But there's another directory. It's called the Lamb's Book of Life. You may have your name in this directory, but the important thing is your name in the Lamb's Book of Life? Some people are content with their name just being in the directory. But again, just having your name here isn't really going to make much difference. In the parable of the sower, if you remember that one, there were, the wayside soil, but then there was the rocky soil, and there was the thorny soil, and there was the good ground. But it appears that at least two-thirds of the seed was lost. The rocky and the wayside as well, and the thorny side. So there were some great losses there. And remember the parable of the talents. There was the five-talent man, the two-talent man, and the one-talent man. But of those three, one-third of them were lost. What about our current parable, the parable of the 10 virgins? Half of them are lost. So again, just having your name in a group, there's not a good statistic there. But let's think about those five foolish virgins for a minute. They came with good intentions. They showed up, and that's commendable. And when they came with their lamps. They didn't plan to fail. They aren't accused of any overt sins. You know, we're not told that they were wicked, but they were unprepared, and they lacked foresight. And this was their undoing. We need to ask ourselves, where is our name? Is your name in the directory? Good if it is. But your name needs to be in the Lamb's Book of Life. I can't present it to you today. I don't have access to it. But God does. And we know that in the day of judgment, he's going to look there. Because in Revelation chapter 20 and verse 15, and whosoever was not found written in the book of life was cast into the lake of fire. God isn't going to look in this church directory on the day of judgment. He's going to look into the Lamb's book of life. And he keeps it current and up to date. And it's up to date by those who are continually ready for his coming. That those who are expecting it and who are living accordingly. Again, thinking of those five foolish virgins, they sought oil from the wise ones. Give us of your oil. Now, we can't really pass on the judgment on those five wise. Why didn't they share their oil? Well, their thought was, if we do, our lamps are going to go out as well because the bridegroom's coming. He hadn't arrived yet. He still may take his time getting here, and if we give you of our oil, ours may go out as well as yours, and we'll all be in the dark. The point is, they couldn't do it. We know that no one else can be prepared for us. I can't prepare for you, and you can't prepare for me. Character, obedience, these are not transferable. We can transfer money, we can transfer possessions, and various other things, but I can't work for you, and you can't work for me. The five foolish virgins needed to bring their own oil. What other people have done isn't going to count in the day of judgment. Romans chapter 14, verse 12, so then every one of us shall give account of himself to God. And so there won't be any finger pointing in the day of judgment and say, it's his fault, it's her fault that I didn't obey. I remember a person talking one time about the judgment. I believe it was a preacher. And he said, here's, you know, this person standing in the day of judgment. And Jesus says, why didn't you obey me? And he says, well, my preacher told me I didn't have to. And he looked over there and he saw that preacher. And he says, preacher, tell him why I didn't have to obey him. The man had nothing to say. You see, I can't point fingers at somebody else and blame them for my neglect. Therefore, we must be prepared. There's an outward preparation, a form of preparation in when we obey the gospel. Paul spoke in Romans chapter 6, verse 17, but God be thanked that ye were the servants of sin, but ye have obeyed from the heart that form of teaching or doctrine which was delivered you, being then made free from sin, you became the servants of righteousness. You see, no one can believe, repent, confess their faith, or be baptized for you. That's something that you must do. And likewise, no one can attend in your place. You know, there are a number of empty chairs here, but we can only fill one at a time. Some chairs will remain empty because the people who ordinarily would be there are not here. No one can attend for you. We see in Hebrews chapter 10 and verse 25, not forsaking the assembling of ourselves together as the manner of some is, but exhorting one another and so much the more as you see the day approaching. And so there's an outward preparation, but there also needs to be an inward preparation as well. We need to hold on to faith and hope and love. There are many blessings that we enjoy, but these are, you might say, the core blessings. In fact, in 1 Corinthians chapter 13 and verse 13, Paul said, and now abideth faith, hope, and love. These three, but the greatest of these is love. If we are going to be prepared for the Lord's coming, it's not something that we just did one time and then we can let it rest. Sometimes we might do that with material things or in our own personal lives. For instance, if you are planning a trip somewhere, you might say, well, we need to make sure the car is ready. I'll go get the oil changed. Make sure that the fluid levels are up. Make sure that it's cleaned out. These various things. And once that's accomplished, park it in the driveway. And there's nothing more to do until it's time to go. But that doesn't work in the Christian life. There is a constant maintenance that needs to be going on. We can't just say, well, there was a one time that I was baptized and now I'm just waiting. No, we need to be busy. In fact, Peter tells us in 2 Peter chapter 1, beginning in verse 5, that there are things that we must add to our faith. He says there, besides this, giving all diligence, add to your faith virtue, and to virtue knowledge, and to knowledge temperance, and to temperance patience, and to patience godliness, and to godliness brotherly kindness, and to brotherly kindness love or charity. Now, some have allowed their lamps to go out, just like those five foolish virgins. You know, again, you can picture them there. What happened? They all slumbered and slept. The lamps were burning. They were sleeping. They were unconscious as to what was going on. Perhaps if they had remained awake, they might have been able to look in their lamps and say, oh, the oil's going down. I'm going to run and get some because the bridegroom hasn't come yet. But they fell asleep. Some have likened that to death. That is, in this overall picture of Christians and being prepared and the Lord's coming, what happens to those Christians? Well, if you live long enough, you're going to die. And likewise with us, the Lord may delay his coming and death may take us. But if we have been prepared, even though you might say our lamp goes out, there is provision to relight it when the Lord's coming because we've been prepared. We brought the extra oil. They neglect the work of the Lord. And that's something that's easy to do. They seldom attend worship services. They're not ready for Jesus. In Mark chapter 13, verse 37, what I say unto you, I say unto all, watch. Be watching. Now is the time to prepare for the Lord's coming. You know, we know he will return. There's no question about that. Acts chapter 1, verse 11, the apostles were out there at the Mount of Olives, I believe it was, and Jesus ascended into the heavens, out of sight. And you can imagine if you were somewhere and somebody suddenly started going up into the air and up and into the clouds, you'd keep looking and keep looking until your neck hurt, trying to see what's going to happen. When are they coming down again? Because usually what goes up must come down. But we see in verse 11 of Acts 1, so that there were two men there in shining clothing, most likely angels, that said, ye men of Galilee, why stand ye gazing up into heaven? This same Jesus, which is taken up from you into heaven, shall so come in like manner as you have seen him go into heaven. He's coming back. They, after they heard this message, went back into Jerusalem, and they were rejoicing. Jesus wants to welcome us. In John chapter 14, verse 1, it says, let not your heart be troubled. You believe in God, believe also in me. In my Father's house are many mansions. If it were not so, I would have told you, I go to prepare a place for you. And if I go and prepare a place for you, I will come again and receive you unto myself, that where I am, there you may be also. Jesus has gone to prepare a place for us, but have we prepared for him? That's the question. Unfortunately, many will dread that hour when the Lord returns. You know, these five foolish virgins, they must have felt terrible when they returned to the place of the wedding and there the door was shut. And those words are seemingly so final, and the door was shut. They knocked, but they were refused entrance. I know you not. The second coming, of course, will reveal our true character. Like the virgins, there are many church members. As I said, you know, there's lots of people in the church directory. All across the world, there are many church directories and many, many names in it. But it's what's in the Lamb's Book of Life that really counts. The day will reveal the truth. 1 Corinthians chapter 3, verse 13. Every man's work shall be made manifest, for the day shall declare it, because it shall be revealed by fire. And the fire shall try every man's work of what sort it is. You know, human nature is revealed in this parable. It's so true to life that that's the way people often are, is they neglect the important things. They don't think ahead, what if? Well, likewise, we need to be sure that we're thinking ahead, what if the Lord should come today? Am I prepared? Have I been watching? You know, there are wise people and there are fools. The wise watch and are ready. But we need to ask ourselves, what about me? What about you? Which one of the groups are you in? And you know yourself as to what kind of person you are. Are you prepared for the Lord's return? As I said earlier, many will dread that day. In Revelation chapter 6, verse 16, it says, "And they said to the mountains and rocks, fall on us and hide us from the face of him that sitteth on the throne and from the wrath of the Lamb. For the great day of his wrath is come, and who shall be able to stand?" We want to be ready. And if we are, that day holds no fear for us, but rather rejoicing and the greatest happiness that we could ever experience. This morning, I hope we appreciate more the lesson that's found in the parable of the five wise and the five foolish virgins, and that we want to be among the wise. So this morning, if you've come to faith in Jesus Christ, why not decide today to put that faith into action by repenting of sin, confessing your faith, and being baptized for remission of sins. And as a Christian, if you have not been ready, if you're not prepared for the Lord's return, you can fix that right now by repenting, resolving in your heart to turn from whatever it is that's been keeping you negligent and unprepared, and ask God to forgive. We'd be glad to pray along with you and help you in any way. The scripture and write our song is for your encouragement as we stand and as we sing.